Hi, I'm Wendy Francis, nutrition therapist, emotional eating expert, and entrepreneur. I've helped countless people overcome their obsession with food and weight. Isn't it time you overcame what you had become and ignite who you were meant to be? Your time to become an overcomer starts now. Welcome to another episode of Overcoming Emotional Eating. In today's episode, you're actually going to hear an earlier call that I did for clients on sleep and eating. And what's so funny when I listen back to this is that I was talking about creating this podcast. Now the podcast obviously has come to fruition, but you'll hear one of my early glimmerings of bringing this podcast to life on this call. And you'll get a lot of amazing insights as to how sleep and eating are actually related. Take a listen.
Tonight's topic is a tad bit to the left, so to speak, or the right, whichever way you want to look at it. It's a little bit off topic, but you'll see how it actually comes around to be very pertinent to food and weight and eating. As you know, many of you know who listen to these calls, I am an avid podcast listener, and this summer I'm actually hoping to create my own, but right now I listen avidly. I love learning, and I love teaching, and I listened to a podcast this morning. I'm going to try to find it, actually, in just a little bit for anybody who's interested in listening to it, but I actually was just listening to it for something to learn new. And was kind of floored at what I heard. It was actually a TED Talk that was given in April 2019 on sleep, of all things. And like you, I probably underestimate the value of sleep, or maybe you guys don't underestimate it. I know I do. After hearing this TED Talk, I was feeling a little bit ashamed about my sleep patterns, and of no fault of the researchers. He was simply presenting the data. And what was so interesting to me was all the research he presented in this 19 minutes were exploring on how imperative sleep is, not just to our psychological well-being, because we all know that if we don't get enough sleep, we're a little crabby, right? Anybody, whether you're 2 years old and you need your afternoon nap, or you're 20 years old, or you're 80 years old, you know, we all know the psychological detriment of sleep deprivation. But what he spoke about were the physical effects of sleep deprivation, which led me then to go on to do some further research I'll tell you about in a few minutes around some other things. But when he was speaking about the physical aspect of sleep deprivation, I was floored about what he said. They actually did, been doing numerous studies over the last, I don't know how many years, but it was a number of years, on the incidence of illness or issues that happen when we have daylight savings time. Daylight savings time has been, I didn't know this, but it's well studied by scientists because of the impact it has on our circadian rhythm. And so for the last number of years, these researchers have studied what happens in daylight savings time when we lose 1 hour of sleep and what happens when we gain 1 hour of sleep conversely. And what they found was there is an increase in heart attacks by 24%, which floored me on the time of year, on the day of the time of year when we lose 1 hour of sleep. Conversely, at the time of year when we gain 1 hour of sleep, the decrease in heart attacks was 21%. So increase 24% when we lose an hour of sleep. And they're just talking about the day of this sleep loss. Increase in heart attacks, 24%. They also were talking about the increase in car accidents the increase in people being late to work, the increase in suicidality and homicides on the day we lose that sleep. I was floored. So these researchers have done a really interesting job of tracking this on what happens on the, you know, the time of year we lose and the time of year we gain. They further took that to actually take people, and they had one group of sleep-deprived individuals where they were only, they were put in a, you know, a sleep study, and they were only allowed to sleep 3 to 4 hours a night, interrupted sleep. They were woken up, and not allowed to have caffeine or any stimulants the next day versus the individuals who went home and were instructed to get 8 hours of sleep. And so for the individuals, they did an MRI brain scan. And while these people were in the MRI brain scan, they actually gave them certain cognitive functioning tests. And the amount of decline just from one night of sleep deprivation was astounding. I forget the percentage that he said, but it was, I my mouth dropped while I was driving in my car listening to this podcast. So it's real. Sleep deprivation is real. And, you know, I know it. I know I feel differently. But I was astounded by what these researchers have done. So it wound up, you know, kind of with my brain saying, okay, so I know sleep deprivation has issues or an impact, I should say, with respect to someone's eating. I know that. I've seen it. I felt it when I, in fact, in my life have been radically sleep deprived. I've watched clients go through it. And so we obviously now know from what this researcher was talking about in his TED Talk about the physical impact and the cognitive decline. So really, what's the research behind sleep deprivation and one's ability to lose weight? Well, I was astounded again. In 1999, this is going back a long time, there was a study at the University of Chicago that showed sleep restriction just
about
4 hours per night brought healthy young adults to the point that some had the glucose and insulin characteristics of diabetics. I'm going to say it again, because that made me say, oh my God. So sleep restriction to just 4 hours per night for a week brought healthy young adults to the point that some had the glucose and insulin characteristics of diabetics. Such sleep restriction may have been a bit extreme, what the researcher said, but it's also not altogether uncommon in our society. And you know, and a lot of people will report getting 4 to 5 hours of sleep a night. So imagine if we're not young, because I'm not anymore, I don't know about you, and maybe we're not healthy, maybe you are on some medications, maybe your body is in some kind of inflammation or some kind of disease state, you're more likely going to fall in that glucose and insulin pattern way quicker. So it's astounding. And that was in 99. So conversely, as time's gone on, there's been more and more and more research. There was research done on some shift workers, people that work third shift. And what they found is shift workers and people who go to bed at irregular and inconsistent hours, which is pretty common for shift workers, because if you work 3 12-hour shifts through the night, then obviously those other 4 days, nights are different. What those individuals demonstrate is that they had a 15 to 30% higher risk for obesity. Now, so all is not lost. Trust me, I'm going to bring this around in a few minutes, but I want you guys to hear what's happening here, that we have to look at the total picture when we look at weight loss, right? So just like when someone gets out of bed in the morning, if they've got to get their cup of coffee, or you feel tired in the afternoon, you need that jolt from a Coca-Cola vending machine, or maybe you want that candy bar. You know, a lot of people in this 24/7 culture where we're go, cups of coffee, cans of soda, Starbucks, candy bars are staples for many consumers. And for some, the day won't begin without that Starbucks or that cup of coffee and or that can of Coke. And caffeine has now become the most rampantly addictive drug. drug in the United States of America, just so you understand that. That's intense, right? But it's true because we are all sleep deprived. And in fact, you know, we know that the lack of sleep creates a vicious cycle. It's one of the reasons why we do pull and we try to pull as much caffeine out of everybody's diet. And it doesn't mean to take it totally away, right? Having one cup of coffee here, a cup of tea, you know, but it's the quantity, because what we know happens is caffeine creates a vicious cycle. The more tired you are, the more caffeine you'll consume to stay awake during the day. But the more caffeine you consume, the harder it is to fall asleep the next night, right? Not only are foods and drinks high in caffeine, like they keep you up at night, but they're also usually, not all the time, but a lot of them have sugar or maybe artificial sugar in them. And so you can wind up having that sugar rush as well, depending on what you use for your caffeine. For those of you who actually suffer from GERD, G-E-R-D, gastroesophageal reflux, we also know that caffeine increases exacerbation of GERD, and individuals with GERD often suffer from nighttime heartburn, so they have a hard time sleeping. If you have GERD, you can understand that. You may have a hard time sleeping anyway because of nighttime heartburn, and then those sleep disorders can lead to insomnia and sleep apnea and daytime sleepiness and restless leg syndrome, and all of those can be created from this vicious cycle. We also know that food is related to sleep by appetite and metabolism. Now, when you hear this research, it's astounding to me, and it's things that I knew, but I never put it in this context and put it all together. There's research by a prominent PhD, Dr. Van Cotter. He does a lot of obesity research, a lot of weight loss research, so I follow a lot of what he does. And his research actually shows that people who don't get enough sleep are more likely to have bigger appetites due to the fact that their leptin levels are low. Now, for those of you who don't know what leptin is, I'm going to explain. But leptin is probably one of the biggest factors in obesity and weight gain. Leptin is a hormone that's produced by the body's fat cells, just so you can understand this. The leptin hormone tells our brain when we have enough fat stored and that we don't need to eat, right? So if your leptin levels are too low, your brain is actually going to tell your body to eat because it thinks you don't have enough fat stored. So the last thing you want is low leptin levels. You actually want higher leptin levels, and you want your body to be sensitive to leptin, because one of the other things that can happen is leptin resistance, which is where your body is resistant to uptaking leptin. So when we are sleep deprived, our leptin levels drop, our brain overthinks, so to speak, it thinks that we don't have enough food, and it makes us hungry. Leptin is the hormone that makes us feel full. And so if we have low levels because of sleep deprivation, we are going to feel hungrier. To make matters worse, it simultaneously increases the production of another hormone called ghrelin, G-H-R-E-L-I-N, which is a hormone that stimulates appetite. So not only are you hungry because your leptin levels are low, but you're also hungry because you have an increase in ghrelin, and that hormone stimulates the appetite. So the reality is, and then there's also this condition that known as leptin resistance that we know happens in sleep deprivation too. So even if the leptin levels are normal, the body's not responding to leptin, and that's called leptin resistance. And again, what your body's, your brain's going to do is it's going to say you're hungry, you're not going to feel full, and you're going to overconsume. So when the brain doesn't receive the leptin signal, it erroneously thinks that your body's starving, even though it has more than enough energy stored. So having low leptin levels is not the way you want to go. Not only is your body's system working against you, but if you're up for more hours each day, right? So if you're up 18 hours a day and you only sleep 6, it also makes sense that you're going to eat more during waking hours because you have more hours awake. studies definitely show that people tend to make poorer choices when they don't have enough rest. Now, this is true across the board. So this is not just for food. This is for, you know, making a left at a turn signal. It can be emotionality. It can be making a mistake on a test, right? So we absolutely understand that, but it's true in food choices too. It has to do with the way the brain wires itself when it's deprived of restorative rest periods. So if you can understand, if you can make a poor judgment on a test, you can make the same poor judgment in what you're going to eat if you're chronically sleep deprived. Another reason why people might overeat on cookies or cake or chips is because we're cranky and we're moody. This is what I said at the very beginning. I always knew of this kind of situation, this piece, the psychological piece, right? The more sleep deprived we are, the more likely we're going to eat cookies or potato chips to make us feel better, right? That's the nourishing piece. But we also know there's psychological manifestations to fatigue, sleep, and hunger, and that those things are very similar, right? So as I mentioned, we don't want to have low leptin levels. And I can't ever do these calls without bringing you guys a couple solutions. Here's why. In my business, and it always has been my business to find solutions, to not get stuck in the problems and to not stay stuck in the story. We can, in fact, become empowered over our own issues if we know what to do and we stay stuck in the solution and not in the problem. So I like to bring the problem to you guys, right? Here's the problem, and then what's the solution? And there are a number of research-based solutions that can help with leptin levels. Number one, avoid all processed foods. We know that processed foods compromise the integrity of the gut and they drive inflammation. Inflammation decreases leptin. So just like sleep deprivation decreases leptin, so does inflammation. I'm going to tell you, please look for inflammation over the next 5 years. Because for many, many years, we looked at inflammation for things like a hurt knee or maybe people with arthritis. But they're now thinking that diabetes has an inflammatory response issue and a number of other diseases, autoimmune and other, have an inflammatory component to them. If that's true and inflammation decreases leptin, there's another vicious cycle going on there as well. Number two, eat soluble fiber. Eating fiber can improve not only your gut health, but it can protect against obesity. It can decrease your risk for prostate and colon cancers, and it can help you go to the bathroom regularly, which can help your metabolic rate move. It can help your whole body move in and out of toxicity. So eating soluble fiber can help improve your leptin levels. Exercise. Now, in our plan, we don't necessarily always talk about exercise. There are some clients that I do talk about exercise with, and one of the reasons is because we know physical activity can help reverse leptin resistance. So if you have some facet of leptin resistance, then some physical activity can absolutely help that. It can also help with circadian rhythms. It can help with cortisol level, stress release mechanism, catecholamine issues, so lots of other things, but definitely can help reverse leptin resistance. So exercise can be helpful with that. As I mentioned, poor sleep is implicated in problems with leptin, and so that's something that you may want to work on after this call. We can talk about that further in just a second. Eating protein. Eating enough protein, adequate protein, doesn't have to be over-consuming protein, but making sure that you get regular quantities of protein throughout the day can really help with leptin sensitivity. So, which can help you not overconsume later on in the day. So, all a facet of eating a healthful diet similar to what's on plan. So, if you've heard all of this and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not getting enough sleep, which is the first thing I thought when I listened to this TED Talk, all is not lost. You can always still right the ship. And what that might look like for you can vary. If it's paying more attention and at least for now, going to bed at the same time and waking up at the same time. The researcher recommends even on the weekend. So even if you go to bed at 11 and you wake up at 5, at least at the same time, even if it's not the appropriate 7 to 8 hours a night. The other facet, depending on your schedule, is even if you can't get enough sleep at night, if in the afternoon you find that you're getting hungry out of your tiredness, identify it. See if you can put your head down for 5 minutes. I remember in kindergarten having to put my head down. We still took that 20-minute nap or whatever after lunch. And I think we probably do that, especially if we're sleep-deprived based on this evidence. Because you can't make sleep up like a bank deficit, but you certainly can quell the sleep hunger, so to speak, by giving yourself that micro break in the afternoon instead of trying to fill it with caffeine or sugar or the like.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, share it with a friend. Rate, review, and subscribe. You never know who you'll help become the next overcomer.